Our meditations from now on will be on the saints outside the sacred scriptures. It was simply logical to begin with Mary and Joseph, given the thousands of saints in the calendar of the church. We had to make a choice. Here are some of the norms that I followed. All the saints on which we will concentrate from now on come after the age of persecution, when the Church of the Catacombs was finally liberated. I plan to follow a chronological order with very few exceptions. The saints are those who had lived a consecrated life. In fact, had been founders and foundresses of institutes of Christian perfection. Most of them have produced extensive writings, and we shall draw on these writings to learn what sanctity is all about from those men and women who wrote about both sanctity and how to achieve it. Writings are extensive, some literally libraries. We may say the saints we'll choose are those who have shaped the church's 2,000 years of tradition on what is sanctity and how you become holy. Their spiritual writings, and of course, their saintly lives, form, we may say, the history of holiness in the Catholic Church. They have been the inspiration of literally millions of followers of Christ over the ages. They cover the span from early Christianity until our day. And you would expect me to say this, and at least some, even just a little bit, of their writings should be memorized. What we remember, hear it. What we remember is the only resources that our mind has for shaping our lives. By memorizing, you place into your intellect the foundation for all your knowledge. You might wonder, where will Father Hardin begin? By now you should almost know. Saint Augustine. Our first meditation, therefore, after Our Lady and Saint Joseph, is Saint Augustine. My plan from now on will be to give a short biographical summary of the saint's life, activity, and achievement. Then concentrate on the saint's teaching, and either while discussing what the saint had said and written, or separately draw implications for our own pursuit of holiness. The lifespan of each of these saints is worth memorizing. They give us a chronology of sanctity over the centuries. Saint Augustine, born in 354, died in 430 AD. There are two stages to the life of Saint Augustine, before baptism and after baptism. His mother, Monica by name, and his father was Patricius. His mother was a Christian long before she married Patricius. His brother, Nemegius, was the father of two religious women, and the sister of Augustine became superior. Monica did her best to instruct her child in Christianity. But in those days, as you know, they postponed baptism till either later in life or even to just before death to make sure. By the age of 16, whatever his mother taught him, he gave up. He became a victim of lust. And, being a very intelligent man, he joined what we call the Manichaean heresy, the Manichaeans, who, by the way, had priests and bishops, but Manichaeans. In the Manichaean position, there are two final gods, creators, if you wish. The good God, the creator of everything good, and the evil deity of everything bad. The Manichaeans, therefore, did not believe in free will. It all depends on which of these two gods is mastering your life. If it's the good God, you are good. If it's the bad God, I'm sorry, but that's the way I've been made. He had a debate with the Manichaean bishop. And the Manichaean bishop was no match for St. Augustine's intelligence. Augustine's conversion began. He was baptized by St. Ambrose. And in reading the scriptures, and that was the immediate occasion for his conversion. The critical passage he read was in Romans chapter 13, verses 13 and 14, where he discovered that he, Augustine, had a free will. Immediately after baptism, St. Augustine sold all his property, yea, whatever he owned, to the poor, founded a monastery on one of the estates already alienated from the Manichaeans. He became a priest and a bishop in record time. Became coadjutor bishop and then bishop of Hippo in northern Africa in 396 at the age of 42. He wrote his book, The Confessions, shortly after his conversion. He made the famous distinction between the use of something and its enjoyment. There are things you may have to use, but what a difference if you willfully enjoy what you use. As bishop, he made of his episcopal residence a monastery. We may call him the patriarch of religious life. The essential elements of St. Augustine's rule of life have shaped all religious institutes in the Western world. His areas of activity covered administration of his diocese, preaching extensively, writing far into the night, participating in many of the conferences of bishops in his day, and then spending most of his life in combating the three major areas of the church's doctrine denied in his day and defended by St. Augustine. These three areas of St. Augustine's defense of the faith are a synthesis of his spirituality. We may say that Augustine's writings, which fill a small library, they are extensive in the extreme. However, it was especially his combating the errors of Manichaeism, of Donatism, and of Pelagianism that Augustine shaped not just his own spirituality, we may safely say shaped the spirituality of the Catholic Church. The greatest mind in Christianity after St. Paul. Before we analyze his spiritual teaching, it would be well to observe that what Augustine did and how God drew on his genius is part of the providence of God. It was Augustine who taught God allows error in order that truth might be more deeply, more clearly, with greater certitude, and more effectively be known and put into practice. The more widespread the error, says Augustine, the higher the plans that God has for the dissemination of the truth. And since error in the mind is the foundation of evil in the will, the greater the error, the more deep and intelligible will be the truth. And the greater the evil, the greater will be the good. Our century, the 20th century, is the most erroneous century in 2 millennia of Christianity. In our century, as our Holy Father tells us, is the most murderous century in the history of man. And that is why God has phenomenal sanctity in store for the world in the centuries to come. Now Augustine's teaching, it will come necessarily in three parts. First, his writings in combating the Manichaeans, among whom he was a member and a staunch and virulent defender of Manichaeanism against Christian. once he became a Christian, oh, he controlled his temper with the strongest language that any defender of the faith has ever used against heretics. I assure you, in very clear Latin, was written by St. Augustine. First, out of a bevy of profound truths of St. Augustine, all dealing with the spiritual life. First, the source of all moral evil, the foundation of all sin, resides in the free will of creatures. And the free will of angels in the free will of human beings. How we need to hear that. All the crime, all the murder, all the treachery, all the pride and lust and anger, the source is the created will of angels and human beings. I could use some water. I know of nothing in the spiritual life that is more fundamental than our conviction that all the evil in the world, in the lives of other people, and with emphasis in our own lives, is the result of our own free will. St. Augustine continues, we have only one soul and not two. One emanating from the good God and the other emanating from the bad God. How little people know that schizophrenia is part of the culture of one professedly civilized nation after another. We've only one soul, one free will. We do the choosing. All being, everything, whether material or spiritual, is essentially good, since God is its author. All the evil comes from the free will of creatures. Oh, how that needs to be remembered. Augustine continues, evil is always a privation of some good that should be present. Evil is not in itself something bad, as though sin was a reality. sin is something which is missing, which should be there. God is pure spirit. God has no body. He is not corporeal. The emphasis on God's absolute, unqualified spirituality is crucial for the understanding of Christian sanctity. Why? Because that is what the spiritual life is. It is the life of God lived out in us by His grace. One final observation. St. Augustine held, as he should, there is no contradiction between the Old and the New Testament. The New Testament is the fulfillment of the Old. And that is why we may say, 17 centuries later, in the Church's liturgy, in every sacrifice of the Mass, we have readings from both the Old and the New Testament. And to understand the Old Testament, we must have mastered the Old Testament and the New. The Old Testament is the prelude for the New. The New Testament explains the Old Testament. And one reason for St. Augustine's stressing the divine inspiration of both testaments, both are from the good God, is because there are so many moral, shall we call them, teachings in the Old Testament that can be a scandal to believing Christians. The New Testament is a fulfillment of the Old. We need to know, this is Augustine, what the human race had been, even the chosen people, before Christ came into the world. The Old Testament commanded charity. Oh, but what a limited charity that was. Your neighbor. And who's your neighbor? Either one who is related to you by blood or a fellow Jew. What Christ did to the commandment of charity. Loving one another, even as He who is God become man, has loved us. And that means everyone. Loving them, even to dying out of love for them. The Old Testament prescribed, as we may say, but put the word in quotation marks, chastity. There was a sixth and ninth commandment. Well, the Jews practiced polygamy. The Jews divorced their wives. And a husband would not think of marrying another woman unless, well, shall I say it, this other woman was more attractive than his wife. Christ forbade polygamy. There is no more monogamy approved by God anywhere on earth today, including among the 500 million Muslims. No wonder they are Muslims. They do not believe in Christian chastity. We continue. This teaching of St. Augustine, the second level, derives especially from his confrontation with and refutation of the Donatists. They claimed that only holy people belong to the church. And of course the Donatists were the holy people. In the heyday of Donatism, hundreds of bishops, especially in Africa, were Donatists. Now Augustine's teaching, let me tell you, Augustinian theology is the bedrock of Christian spirituality. Says Augustine, no, the church has members who are good and others who are not good. There are both good Christians and bad Christians, and both belong to the church. One reason, no doubt, why Donatism became so widespread was because the persecution of Christianity in the early church weeded out, well, those who are willing to be martyrs from everybody else. It's one thing to believe in Christ, it's something else to believe in him so deeply and so firmly as to be willing to die for Christ. This is Augustine's definition of a Christian, one who is willing to die for Christ. Again, taught Augustine, and the church is universal. She has among her members both saints and sinners. we need this in our pursuit of sanctity. Augustine knew most saints have been converted sinners, and Augustine is a classic example. Is that ever important, my dear friends in Christ? And it is God's grace that enables sinners, even criminals, to become holy. Again, St. Augustine's teaching. The church is indeed universal, but the church's greatest trial and the main reason in Augustine's day and the first four centuries of Christian history and now for 20 centuries in our day, the principal scandal is the sinners who call themselves Christians. The greatest obstacle to sanctity is the number of sinners who claim to be Christians. And especially when these sinners become leaders, teachers, priests, and bishops. That's Augustine writing 16 centuries ago. How devastatingly true that is in our day. Yet, on that same level, says Augustine, no matter how much sin there is among professed Christians and Catholics, the church's teaching and her sanctity is not compromised, either by the erroneous teachers or the evil living Christians. As Augustine says, there was already a Judas among the apostles. Augustine continues, no one leaves the Catholic Church. Hear it and don't forget. No one leaves the Catholic Church except through pride, jealousy, or moral depravity. There are no rational grounds for giving up one's Catholic faith. Again, Augustine, how we need this today. the sacraments which Christ instituted are valid. The consecration at Mass is valid. The absolution in the sacrament of penance is valid. Even though administered, whether the Mass is offered or the absolution is given by notorious sinners, Christ confers his grace through the sacraments, even through sinners. How the next teaching of Augustine is needed, especially today. Sure, said Augustine, the sacraments do give grace just because they are administered. But the measure or degree of the grace received depends on the one who receives them. The more humble, the more patient, the more prayerful, the more chaste a person is when receiving Holy Communion, the more grace is received. And so of all the other sacraments, one more teaching of St. Augustine, based on his many volumes in refuting the Donatists. There are three sacraments that are, as he said, sacraments of character, received only once, and change the person who has received them, and they are the sacraments of baptism, confirmation, and the priesthood. Once baptized, you are baptized for eternity. Once confirmed, you are confirmed forever. Once ordained, you are ordained forever. And this, how important this is today. Once we are baptized, we receive a title to grace that no one else has a claim to. Once we're confirmed, and it is mainly, as Augustine makes clear, confirmed in the faith. We are therefore confirmed in the faith in order to have the strength of martyrs. And the priesthood, the priesthood, the priesthood, the priesthood, the priesthood, the priesthood has been transmitted from one ordained bishop going back to the Last Supper after another. All of this is just a taste of St. Augustine's teaching. I should have warned you, this will be a little longer meditation. The third level of St. Augustine's teaching is at the bedrock of all Christian spirituality. It is Augustine's lifetime, a refutation of Pelagianism. Pelagius, as we know, was a British monk. As a monk, he should have stayed home in his monastery. He traveled. What he saw, he was scandalized at. And as a result, he decided, what's wrong with the Catholic Church? She believes that. And what folly. She believes that you will reach heaven and above all become holy only if you have received the grace. Not so. What Christians need is a stronger spinal column. What they need is more willpower and more grace. Most of Augustine's writings, years, were spent in defending divine grace. But notice, and this is why St. Augustine is the greatest father of the Church. It was he who provided for all future centuries, and I dare say until the end of time, two basic convictions that we should all have if we hope to become holy. We must be convinced, as Augustine was in refuting the Manichaeans, that we have a free will. Our conduct does not depend, as the Manichaeans taught, on whether we are mastered by the good or the bad deity. Or as our modern Manichaeans teach, Manichaeism is widespread in the modern world. Our conduct, the modern Manichaeans tell us, is shaped by heredity, environment, and education. That, Augustine would say, is a lie. We have a free will. We shape our moral behavior. That's the first and greatest contribution of St. Augustine to Christian spirituality. But then, in refuting the Pelagians, Augustine taught in the strongest language at the disposal of one of the Church's greatest minds. We do have a free will. Our destiny does depend on how we use that will. But our wills alone are not enough. I don't say to reach sanctity, even to reach heaven, we need the grace of God. All the moral heresies for 2,000 years in Christianity have been rooted in either Manichaeism or Pelagianism, either denying free will or denying the necessity of divine grace. In our culture of death, the term coined by our present Holy Father has the dubious privilege of combining both errors. Augustine continues, man was elevated to a supernatural life the moment he was created by God. Our first parents received two kinds of life when they were created by God, and natural life in their souls and a supernatural life through sanctifying grace. And Augustine coined that precious term for sanctifying grace, the anima anime, the soul of the soul. The anima, the soul, that we commonly understand is the principle of the life of our bodies. But there's another soul, the soul of our soul, which is sanctifying grace. And Augustine says, remember this, the essence of holiness is possessing that soul of the soul. The essence of sanctity is being in sanctifying grace. What we now popularly call sanctity is growth in that essential holiness which we received when we were baptized. This is the cardinal error of Protestantism. Three volumes that I've written on Protestantism. My first one, The Protestant Churches of America, my bestseller, over 250,000 copies, until I wrote The Catholic Catechism. Used widely in Protestant seminaries to understand what Protestantism is. I love Protestants, but I sure know that Protestantism is not Catholicism. Protestantism denies there is such a thing as the supernatural life. That is why, within 10 years of Luther's break with the Catholic Church, began the universal destruction of all religious communities. And the monastery of Wittenberg, while Luther had been the superior, became, as I'm sure you've already heard, a condominium for married priests and married nuns. Augustine taught, God gave the human race from the dawn of human history two lives, not one. And Adam's fall, so Augustine taught, deprived him and his descendants of that second life, that supernatural life, which God had conferred on mankind at the dawn of human creation. And baptism restores that life. People now tell me that priests baptizing children give a little homily of the baptism. And I'm quoting people that I know, people that I'm teaching. And the priests tell the people, just to enlighten you, baptism, the church no longer believes, removes original sin, or restores the supernatural life. Pelagianism is widespread and has deeply, how well I know, deeply penetrated some of the most learned circles of what is still called Catholic Christianity. Again, in his conflict with Pelagianism, Augustine taught, and we better know, that even after we are baptized, the supernatural life is restored. That's the main purpose of baptism. But concupiscence remains. Our spontaneous, call them natural tendencies towards pride, lust, anger, covetousness, envy, laziness, and gluttony. Oh, and the big one, envy, remain. Those urges remain, and Augustine taught, and we become only as holy as with God's grace we spend our lives resisting these spontaneous, natural inclinations of our fallen human nature. And, says Augustine, it is precisely in coping with these sinful tendencies that God has allowed us to retain what we call concupiscence, hear it, so we might become more holy. Isn't that wonderful? It's frightening, but it's also wonderful. We now have an enemy within our own fallen selves. And our holiness depends on the measure in which we have both recognized and always with God's grace conquered these sinful, shall I call them, instincts of our fallen human nature. Says Augustine, each of us should know that we've got these sinful drives. Each of us should know which among these sinful drives is strongest in me. and then the sanctity that Christ has in mind for me is to conquer with a grace from Christ the predominant sinful instinct in my distinctive personal fallen human nature. However, and this is now Augustine, though we have this fallen human nature, we remain free. The total 100% contradiction of Martin Luther. And Martin Luther, my God, Martin Luther was an Augustinian. Did you know that? Talk about rejecting the spirituality of your founder. Luther denied that we have a free will. Our passions, well, Luther, it was his sexual passion. He denied we got a free will. Either we have the grace redefined by Luther and we'll be saved, or poor dears, we don't have the grace and we shall be lost. Grace, continues Augustine, is absolutely gratuitous, a sheer gift of God. Grace, you get the grace, you get the grace, you get the grace, you get the grace. This is Augustine. How we need, as we close our present year, 1995, how we need to hear, we cannot, it is impossible to cope with our fallen human nature, our powerful sinful drives, without God's grace. And we get this grace only three ways: by prayer, through the sacraments, and by cooperating with the grace we received. We are to merit, hear it, we are to merit sanctity. You got to earn holiness. And of course, you must earn or merit heaven. And how do we merit both sanctity and our salvation? By our free will cooperating with the grace of God. And the more grace you receive, the more grace you receive, the harder you have to work in using your free will in cooperating with the grace of God. One more and closing teaching of St. Augustine. Our final perseverance, leaving this world in the grace of God, is a special grace for which we must pray every day. Even a lifetime of the practice of virtue is no guarantee of reaching heaven. You must pray for the grace, as we commonly say, of a happy death. And that is why the Catholic Church, inspired by the Holy Spirit, but instructed by St. Augustine, has made sure that we Catholics, in saying the Hail Mary, close, Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. And it is Mary on whom we mainly depend to obtain from her divine Son the grace of dying in the friendship of God. I said, by way of apology, this would be a longer meditation. What St. Augustine teaches, not taught, teaches on the spiritual life and the means of achieving sanctity is the bedrock teaching of the Roman Catholic Church. We need his wisdom. We also need his understanding that sanctity is to be earned by the use of our stubborn free will, but our sanctity depends on the loving grace of God, for which we must use our free will to pray, to receive the sacraments, and to cooperate with the graces that God gives us. St. Augustine, the converted sinner, the one for whose